One show cares about your health. One show cares about your body. IMA Doctors, live in studio with Jack and Sandy. It's straight talk and honest answers to your healthcare questions from the team of doctors at IMA Healthcare.
It is 11:13. Oh, I'll call it 11:14. Dr. Brent Hella and Lindsay Vettelson. Let's say good morning to both of them. Dr. Hella, how are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
And Lindsay?
Hi.
Lindsay and I have already been talking about NEAT, which is non-exercise activity thermogenesis, which I practiced all night. We have open phone lines because we will have house calls here in just a moment. 237-5948, 800-880-5346. You can text us at 35270. Amy Eiler is keeping her eyes on all of that and will remind me of any emails or texts that come in. And let's talk about NEAT, non-exercise activity thermogenesis. I practiced all night saying that. I didn't practice it, actually. Lindsay, this is an interesting topic.
Yes, it sure is. So what it is this energy that you expend during the day that's non-exercise. So it's all the activities that you do throughout the day. It could be anything from raking your leaves to fidgeting, or it could be anything from walking in the mall to shoveling snow to even just dancing around your house. So these are just these calories that you expend throughout the day.
And I mentioned to Dr. Hella, when you and I were talking earlier, Lindsay, that you mentioned that Dr. Hella even had adapted his workstation. Can you describe that for me? And is this all a part of this NEAT idea?
Yeah, what I ended up doing is I no longer have a chair in my office. I have an exercise ball. And then my workstation, which is two computer screens and a keyboard, now can be raised or lowered. And since I've had it, I've not lowered it yet. So I'll be standing there doing my work throughout the day.
Mm-hmm. And what is the benefit to that you see or know at this point?
You know, the funny thing, what I noticed I got benefit most out of in the afternoon was I wasn't so tired after lunch. It was very, you know, it's like going for a walk after you've eaten. You just kind of feel a little sharper. I think when I'm on my feet like that, I just feel like, you know, I didn't kind of have that 3-4 o'clock dip in energy that I normally kind of had.
Do you have requests at other workstations for a similar situation?
Well, I mean, I've told my patients about this and they're very interested in doing it. And I know a lot of them, some of the bigger companies around town are starting to adapt that. Microsoft, Blue Cross are starting to look at that kind of thing too. So,
you know, Lindsay, earlier when we were talking, there's a bit of a phenomena around, and it's really been around quite a while since I first heard of it. I bet 10 or 12 years, and that's where workstations that are adapted, like Dr. Hella's only, that has like a treadmill so you can move very slowly while you're being a bank teller or whatever.
Yep, because those types of jobs are very sedentary. And with that, obviously a sedentary job, it's, you know, you're not expending a lot of calories. So that can relate to being overweight. And that's obviously a high predictor of obesity. So having a treadmill at your workstation could obviously benefit from that.
Non-exercise activity thermogenesis. How might we do this in our workplace, even if we don't have a treadmill?
One thing that I just changed recently was I removed my garbage can from underneath my desk, and I moved it all the way across the building to a different office. So every time that I have to throw something in the garbage, I have to walk all the way across the other side of the building and throw something away.
And is this a big calorie burner? At the end of the day, this NEAT, how many calories do you suppose we would have burned had we not done it?
Well, for instance, there was a study done, and for a sedentary job, it could be like my job, for instance, I have a very sedentary job, or like, say, a secretary, they burn around 1,000 calories a day for this NEAT. And for the study that was done for a strenuous worker, it could be like a construction worker or a farmer, they burn around 2,400 calories a day. So that's significant.
Back when I was young and in this business, someone told me that if you ever want to impress somebody, walk very quickly down the hall carrying papers in a clipboard. So I started doing that, and now I do it without the clipboard because I really do prefer it. If I get an email wanting to know if we're going to be able to do this or that, I'd rather walk down the stairs and go up our 22 steps and I count steps too, to talk to Danny or whatever, you know, and that's all a part of this neat too. So, all right, enough about me. It's time to take calls about you. Next stop, we'll have house calls here on KFGO. We are back with Dr. Brent Hella, the IMA Doctor Show on 790 KFGO. We have a caller standing by. Here is an email that came in. My husband has a persistent cough. He doesn't smoke. He doesn't really have cold or flu symptoms. He just coughs in the morning, every morning. Should I be concerned? Love, Luann.
That's a tough question because that's a very common question. You know, it could be anything from allergies to, you know, the worst being lung cancer. Obviously, that's what everybody kind of worries about. So that usually needs to be checked out. Oftentimes, it's just a simple fix. You know, maybe someone's got some reflux or they're on a medication that causes a cough or something like that. If there's sort of a checklist that I go through when patients come in complaining of a cough, and it's very rare that we find things bad, but, you know, that's people come in sometimes just to be reassured that's okay. Nothing.
So. Good question. Thank you, Luann. John, thank you for calling the IMA Doctor Show.
Yes, good morning. I'm going to talk to you about iron. My wife is low in iron all the time, and I have a friend that's always high in iron. And can he donate blood for her to transfer it? He has diabetes. Will that transfer in the blood?
Well, I think what your friend probably has is called hemochromatosis, which means that you absorb too much iron. It's very, very common, especially in the Northern European descent that we have up here. Usually, unfortunately, when they, quote, donate or get rid of their iron, they just throw it away, which is sort of an unfortunate thing. They think they see it as, quote, tainted blood. So that's usually not the case. They usually can't donate to somebody who's iron deficient. But your wife, for example, doesn't necessarily need a blood donation, but maybe if she doesn't tolerate iron or isn't absorbing iron or for whatever reason can't get her iron up, what I usually do is send patients over and have iron infusions, which can be intravenous. Usually after two or three doses of IV iron, patients significantly improve, fatigue, restless legs, and all that kind of thing.
Thank you for the call. 237-5948, 800-880-5346. Here's another email, kfgo.studio@kfgo.com. I have been diagnosed with a fatty liver. What does that mean?
Fatty liver, we see a lot in our practice because we get overweight women who come in who are either diabetic or pre-diabetic. I tell patients it's your body's way of trying to get rid of sugar. Now, we usually diagnose that in people who don't drink, so are non-alcoholic drinkers. But what happens is the liver sees sugar, tries to break down sugar, and when it does it, it breaks down into alcohol 24 hours a day. So these women come in and they ultrasound biopsies look exactly like drinkers. They don't drink. The only treatment really of that is weight loss. And there are a couple of medications that will help too, but weight loss, period.
My. It's 11:27. The IMA Doctor Show is on. Doctor Show, have a quick email or two for our guests quickly. Dr. Brent Hella, IMA. Are you giving the flu shot now? Do I have to be a patient to get a flu shot at IMA?
Most patients can just show up and get a flu shot. We've had flu shots, I think, for 6 weeks now, right, Lindsay?
Yeah, that's about right.
So, yeah, we've got them.
Someone evidently was listening earlier when we were talking about non-exercise activity thermogenesis and wants to know how many calories you burn by just fidgeting.
Well, that would obviously depend on, your height and your weight. So I can't put a specific number to that, but... It would probably vary.
I read this morning 55.
Oh.
50.
Well, there you go. Okay.
Yeah. It's 11:36. More of the IMA Doctor Show here on 790 KFGO. We'll sure take your calls right now. 237-5948, 800-880-5346. Looks like email is the way to go today. What causes restless leg syndrome? I hate to be on meds. Can diet and exercise help?
About half the patients that I see in the clinic with restless legs end up having an iron deficiency or a deficiency in vitamin. If your ferritin or iron level goes below 40, that's when restless legs starts to develop. I see it especially in women, but men get it too. There's some other things that are a little less common, Parkinson's disease, MS sometimes can do it. Those are real rare causes. I don't see that very often, but a lot of iron deficiency causes restless legs.
Describe it for us.
Well, patients just describe this inability to keep their legs still, especially like when they're laying down or sitting at work, their legs just jump. Sometimes the partners will know it in bed because their legs will move involuntarily at night, keeps people awake. Sometimes people describe it like worms are crawling up their legs. I've heard that before too. Not a real comfortable thing. And
I would imagine if it was persistent, it would be very tiring as well. It could be exhausting to have.
Yeah,
that
patients really that have real bad restless legs, it's a quality of life issue with them. So
we have Melissa writes in. What programs have you had the most success with when it comes to weight loss? I think I have tried them all.
We have a couple of really good meal replacement plans and programs at IMA and Valley Weight Loss. And one of them that I really promote is OptiFast. And that includes just meal replacements. And another one is MetaFast, and that is meal replacements with one meal a day consisting of protein and vegetables. And it's monitored by Dr. Hilla, a physician, obviously, and then myself, a dietitian.
What's the ideal amount of weight to lose per week, month, or whatever is the ideal way to measure that?
Right away, when you're first on a meal replacement plan, that could be anywhere from, 3 to 5, 6 pounds in a week, because you're losing some water weight with that. And then after that point, you're just burning fat. So it could be, around, 1.5, 2, 3 pounds in a week.
Here's another. This is a good question here. Art, I have heard that diabetes, metabolic syndrome, obesity, and high blood pressure have all been linked to testosterone deficiency. Is that true? Are testosterone treatments safe?
You know, that's a question we kind of go back and forth with in our clinic. You know, oftentimes the cause of low testosterone in these men is because they carry too much fat around. Fat converts their testosterone over into estrogen. So the best treatment for low testosterone overweight men is to lose weight. The safety of testosterone, I don't think, really has been established. I know men do feel better. I was at a conference a couple of weeks ago where one of the big testosterone proponents in the country was promoting this as a weight loss and a health way of life for men. But what he does is most of his patients are only on it for about 6 to 8 months while he gets them to lose weight. So he doesn't have it on long term, but he uses it sort of as a jump start to get these guys feeling better, eating better, and then all of a sudden, 8 months later, they don't necessarily need it anymore.
Mm-hmm. And then they've all bought pants with smaller waists, and they have to keep it off because they don't want to go out and buy more pants.
Right. We're in cahoots with the retail industry in Fargo. So,
Dr. Brett Hilla is with us. This is the IMA Doctor Show. We have 20 minutes in which you can get your medical questions answered at 237-5948 or 800-880-5346. We do have one text question, and we do have one email to get to, too, in case you don't call in. We're gonna get her done. It's 11:44. We're back with Dr. Brett Hilla, an internal medicine physician with IMA Healthcare, and Lindsay Bettelson, a licensed registered dietitian and certified personal trainer. And house calls are underway. We're taking your phone calls. Let's go right to work. Lee, you are on with Dr. Hilla and Lindsay Bettelson. Go ahead.
Good morning. Back in August, I had a colonoscopy, and they found two smaller polyps. One was fine, the other one they considered precancerous. There was also two larger ones, about 3/4 inch in diameter, which they couldn't get out. So we went down to Rochester and had them removed. And they figured they're safe, but they use the term precancer all the time. They should come back in 2-3 to 6 months. What exactly does that term mean?
Great question, Lee.
It means that there are cells, when they look at it under the microscope, that have the potential to turn into colon cancer. There's two different kind of polyps. The precancerous ones are the ones that we get nervous about. There are other but more benign ones that you take off and they're really not going to cause any problems. But you know, kind of like any pre-malignant cells that you might get off from melanoma or pap smears that have precancerous cells. It's just basically a pathologic diagnosis that say, you know, this has the potential to develop into colon cancer. Therefore, we need a little closer surveillance.
Well, that's a real good question, because I always sort of had in my head, of course, I'm not a doctor, that all cells were potentially precancerous, but that's not the case. Huh?
These are actually showing more cells that could be, you know, eventually going into colon cancer. So,
Pat, you are on with Dr. Brent Hella and the IMA Doctor Show on KFGO.
I was diagnosed with Berger's disease back in about 1950. I'm on an artery dilation drug, which has helped my extremities stay warm. But is this my father had it, a sister and brother had it. They allowed cutting on their body. Well, being 50, they were going to take my toes off on my right foot. And I said, no, I still have my toes. I still have all my stuff. But, you know, my dad didn't and my brother and sister didn't. Now, why isn't there more research done on Berger's disease?
Thank you, Pat. And can you describe what it is?
Well, Berger's disease, you know, tends to be a hereditary disorder of blood vessels. So the arteries that feed your extremities. It causes spasms. It can cause pain. It can cause necrosis or deadening of toes and feet. And, you know, it's kind of a scary disease. It's not very common. I mean, I can't remember the last time that I've seen it and or read about it. Made much, much worse by smoking. So I don't know if her family members, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago smoked with this disease, but that was kind of the ultimate death sentence for your fingers if you had Berger's disease and also smoked. So with, you know, healthy diet, lowering cholesterol, platelet, you know, blood thinning medications and blood pressure medications, a lot of patients can be well managed.
Pat, were you the member of the family that did not smoke?
I did not smoke. My brother did not smoke, but still the VA, he was in the Battle of the Bulge. Anyway, the VA took his leg right up to the, you know, the hip line, but one leg. But my dad went to Rochester over and over again. He'd come home maybe for a month, 6 weeks. He couldn't smoke, but then he'd be back in it, rolling his own with Edgeworth tobacco, pipe tobacco. So we kids all saw this, and we didn't like that. But I never smoked. No, no way.
Well, Pat, thank you very much for your call. We appreciate it.
You know, and the other thing is that just because someone didn't smoke, somebody in the family smokes, there's your secondhand smoke too. So, you know, how much she got exposed to it secondhand, you know, also, you know, puts people at risk. So
That's very interesting. I remember one time hearing that very response to someone who said, Aunt Mavis never smoked a day in her life and she got lung cancer. And upon further questioning, everybody else in the family did smoke, and she was there. So, interesting. Anecdotal, but interesting. It's 11:48, but I believe Mavis. It's 11:48. This is the IMA Doctor Show on 790 KFGO. He will prescribe the weight loss pill Contrave.
I already use something like it in clinic, but the two medicines that are in this medication are actually available generic on their own. So we've been using a combination like this for quite a while. It's just now kind of coming FDA approved.
Dr. Brent Hella is with us from IMA, and Lindsay Vettelson. She is a licensed registered dietitian and certified personal trainer. So, Lindsay, you get this question from Lou. Can exercise help fibromyalgia?
Yes, it actually can. For the pain, you can probably end up doing something like swimming or something that's low impact, and that will definitely help that pain.
I have a fur, F-U-R. It counts calories and 10,000 steps a day. I started last November and lost 25 pounds, and now I'm maintaining. At age 69, I did my first 5K last year. So maybe that was a Fit.
Yeah, Fitbit kind of thing. Yeah, I think there are probably about 20 companies that make them. We push them highly in patients. They are fantastic motivators to get people to move.
What those do, they not only keep track of steps you take, but it can monitor your sleep patterns at night. It can give some kind of a rudimentary blood pressure, I suppose, even.
What I like about the sleep parts of this is that to go in for a sleep study is very expensive. That can be up to $2,000. Patients are kind of hemming and hawing with high deductibles now and that sort of thing. I say, hey, for $89, you can go out to Best Buy, get a Fitbit, wear it at night, and guess what? It's a pretty good predictor of how well you sleep. If you're not sleeping well and this is showing that, call me, and then maybe then we can set you up with a sleep evaluation.
Here's another one for Lindsay. How do I know my healthy weight? How can you help me? Are you taking new patients? I will never be a skinny mini. Though there's nothing wrong with skinny minis.
I think there's a difference between being thin and being healthy. I generally sit with my patients and together we decide what that person's healthy weight should be. And that's, I usually generally base it on what their body fat percentage is.
Let's see, we don't have a caller, but we do have another email. And we're closing in on our final questioner. So have you heard of the DASH diet for high blood pressure? A friend said the DASH diet lowered his blood pressure after only 2 weeks.
Yeah, and that the DASH diet is focusing mainly on fruits and vegetables, lean meats, and whole grains. And it's a very healthy meal plan that anyone can follow to help lower their blood pressure.
Another email, can sleep disorders and chronic sleep loss cause major health issues?
Yes, and the more we find out about sleep issues, especially even in our weight loss clinic, that's one of our big things is, do you have sleep apnea? How are you sleeping? You know, that's a huge cause for weight gain. They've done some great studies in patients that were healthy athletes, interrupted their sleep, and after 1 week, all of them complained of aches and pains and depression. Their blood sugar scores would go up. It's humbling how important sleep is to our health.
What is the normal ferritin level?
The normal ferritin level, which is the iron level we talked about with the restless legs, is between about 80 and about 180. And when you get restless legs below, I'd say about 30 or 40, that's when people start getting symptomatic with their iron deficiency.
I think we might have time to take one more call. Hi, David. You're on the IMA Doctor Show with Dr. Brent Hella.
A week ago, and it says that one of the side effects is supposed to cause low blood sugar. However, mine has been up higher from 176 to 250.
Can you set that up? We missed the first couple of words of your question, please.
I've been taking Belvic, a new weight loss drug, for a week. And it's supposed to have lower blood sugar, but instead mine has been elevated up to as high as 258. So I'm wondering if something else is wrong, because I am a type 2 diabetic.
You know, I don't know if it's interacting with one of your other medications or if it's just one of those weird side effects. I don't have a lot of experience with that Belvic. It just came out not too long ago. I'm not a big fan of it yet because it hasn't had its run through, you know, post-study patients yet, but I've never heard of the blood sugars going up, but I suppose it certainly could.
Dr. Brent Hella, thank you very much for coming in. Time to get back to work and standing up.
Right, thank you.
I really like that neat information. And Lindsay Bettelson, licensed registered dietitian, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. That's a good one. We'll do it again next month, the first Monday of the month on KFGO. That would be the